You may be seated. Our third case today is 2014-531, City of Cincinnati versus Joseph W. Testa, Tax Commissioner of Ohio. For the appellate, Mr. Fossey.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. Good morning. More than 40 years ago, this court surveyed the case law regarding real property exemptions for public property and set forth a clear, bright line rule that resolves the case today. This court Cleveland versus Perk case. The court reaffirmed that rule in 2005 in the City of Parma Heights case. That rule is that when private enterprise is given the opportunity to occupy public property with a view to profit, even if some public use and benefit is served thereby, the nature of the property changes such that it can no longer be called public property, and it can no longer be said to be used exclusively for public property. That pronouncement tracks closely the language of the Constitution, Article 12, Section 2, that says the General Assembly may exempt public property when it is used exclusively for public purposes. That same language is found in the statute, Revised Code 5709.
And what's your best argument that this is not being used exclusively for public purpose?
This is not being used exclusively for public purposes because the property is used and occupied for profit by a private entity.
And wasn't the finding that this is a de minimis for-profit operation, that the lion's share of the proceeds go back to the city, and that this management of the golf courses vests no other authority with the managing entity other than, again, the day-to-day operations?
So the BTA's decision did hold that this was de minimis, and they were wrong for a host of reasons. The first of which is that this is, remember, a bright line rule about use. The rule is exclusive use. And in this case, the exclusive use, the control and operation of this property was ceded 100% to Billy Casper Golf. So day-to-day, all the calls that are being made on the field, operation of the property, we're talking about the employees, the greens, the ground, selling hot dogs.
With oversight by the city, there's testimony of the frequency with which city employees go there to oversee several times a week what's happening there, correct?
So the testimony was that they would visit once a week. There was a pair of employees that would travel around once a week and visit the golf courses, which is not at all unusual in a business relationship. You want to see how your property's being run. That's not to say that they were serving hot dogs. The city certainly wasn't setting tea times, serving hot dogs, doing that sort of thing. The type of oversight we're talking about here is present in virtually every business relationship between two entities. The city holds a parcel of land, and it's saying, you know, we have certain standards that we expect this land to be kept to. That's not the same as the boots on the ground operation and use of the property, which is what
but
the statute
anticipates.
But
doesn't it also go to who gets to use this golf course? Isn't that a major factor in determining? And it is a public golf course.
Right.
They're all public golf courses.
So, correct. So the standard of Parma Heights and the cases before it is three-part. So you have owned by the public, used by the public, exclusively used by the public. And we're not here on owned by the public, we're not here on used by the public, we're here on exclusively used by the public. And this court narrowly interprets the phrase exclusively used by the public. As Justice Lanzinger said yesterday in a question to one of my colleagues, there's a strict construction on tax statutes that exempt property. And the reason for that is that the removal of one property from the tax base necessarily affects all the other surrounding properties. So the removal of a business operation, like Billy Casper Golf's operation, on these premises from the tax base means that the schools, the fire, the police, all the local government protection, that cost is being borne not only by the homeowners in the surrounding area, but by other businesses that are directly competing with
Billy
Casper.
And that's the complainant here, was it not? There's
Absolutely.
Another golf course owner that does not want to see these public courses managed and utilized this way?
Right.
But how does that benefit in the end? Say there is some finding that this de minimis, you say there's no room for de minimis analysis here, is that correct?
Absolutely correct.
All right, so then it forces the city to take over the management of these golf courses with city employees, correct?
They testified on the record they had a wealth of options available to them.
Okay,
they could run it themselves.
Say they do that.
Sure. Okay.
All right. Then it still gets a tax exemption at that point, correct?
Provided that it's being used exclusively for public purposes.
All right. Let's presume the scenario would be is that they get their tax exemption. How does that benefit the folks that are complaining right now?
Well, the benefit is that the distribution then is exclusively public use. So, you know,
you're the complainant, the other golf course owner, still in the same position, has to pay taxes on his golf course, and there's six golf courses that are used by the public that can offer a round of golf for fewer dollars, and it's the same scenario.
And the basis for exemption, sort of the bottom line, is that there's some public good subserved thereby that justifies taking that property out of exemption and placing the burden on the other taxpayers. And when it's publicly used, this court has held a public use and occupation exclusively, that purpose justifies pulling that property out of taxation. However, if you've got somebody like Billy Casper Golf, who is in the business of managing golf courses, make no mistake, they have 150 courses that they operate, 30-40% of them are municipal courses, and they made more money on operation of these courses than the city did. So the BTA, they're finding that this 5% number is wrong on a lot of levels. First of all, it's apples to oranges. The BTA looked at net profit and compared it to the gross profit from the operation of the golf courses. And in doing so, they had no basis to say that this net profit is meaningful in the context of this gross profit. They just said 5% is de minimis. And that's the 5% is actually about half of what it should have been because they didn't include the management fee, which would have doubled. So we're talking 10%, even by their bad math. Moreover, as we showed in our brief, the city here is making, on average, $350,000 a year. The golf course manager is making closer to $400,000 on average a year, 1 year as high as $600,000. So to say that that's a de minimis amount of money, it just doesn't make any sense. Not only are we talking about the operation for profit, when we talk about the use of the property, there's no city employees out there, like I said, serving hot dogs and hamburgers. The golf course operator here is has exclusive, by contract, exclusive rights to use of this property. The city reserved for itself the right to enter only in the case of an emergency, and that's to do emergency repairs. That's in their management agreement. So this court has looked at this relationship before. We were here a few years ago on a sales tax case. Exact same players, exact same parties, same golf course, same relationship. And this court had no trouble concluding that Billy Casper Golf is separate from the city, and in that case wasn't entitled to take the city's exemption for the purchases Billy Casper Golf made in pursuance of its own business.
Counsel, why does that matter for this question? Why does it matter whether it's part of the city or an independent contractor?
It matters for this question, it doesn't. But I just want to highlight the fact that that this court has already looked at this and found that there is a clear separation between the two, and that in the sales tax context, this court has already held that Billy Casper Golf was the consumer of the goods that it purchased for its own business operation. So there's no question here that what's happening is an operation of a private entity on this property, and it's not, you know, so I guess another way to look at this is the control element that the BTA pulled out of some cases. And the control here, in the same context as the sales tax case, is just the business relationship. I mean, there isn't. So the exclusive use on the property means we evaluate this real property and every real property that's subject for exemption based on what's happening at the property today.
Does it matter if the property is leased or just managed?
So the lease situation, that's the White House case we cited. Mm-hmm. This court in White House addressed a case where there was no lease, and they said that doesn't matter. That doesn't end our inquiry. We still have to look beyond that to see whether or not this is exclusively used for public purpose. But what we have here, whether you call it a lease or not, I'd call it a lease plus, because not only do they get exclusive use and occupancy of this, to the exclusion of everyone else, including the city. A city can still come. They can still come by and check it out, just like any other business owner.
And terminate the relationship.
They just like any other landowner. But So, but also they get the benefits by contract of operation of this place. So it's not just a lease. It's a lease plus a promise of a fixed management fee, plus a promise that they're the exclusive operator, plus a promise that they get the revenue from food and beverage, the contractor. The contractor gets the revenue from golf merchandise sales. So
well,
this is more than a lease.
Percentage of that goes to the city.
A small percentage.
It's not exclusively in the pocket of the management.
The way this relationship was set up was the golf management company, Billy Casper Golf, got more money for food and beverage sales, depending on how much they sold. So they got 83% of food and beverage and 93% of...
But it never reached the amounts that would trigger that kind of return, did it? They're not as successful as they had hoped to be.
Success isn't necessarily the question, though. The idea is they're not doing this for free. This is their business. They're trying to make money out there. This is a view to a profit. And that's the other way.
And the city's trying to appreciate and obtain efficiencies in the operation while providing a service to the public in the most efficient, cost-effective way.
We don't dispute that the city had efficiency.
So if the city had to replace all of the services that golf management provided with city employees and all the benefits that have to go to city employees and all of the expenses and liabilities, et cetera, and that cost more, and the fees were elevated as a result, is that something that is not to be taken into consideration here?
This court in the earlier sales tax case, the city of Cincinnati made the same argument. They said, you know, public policy reasons justify this court expanding the plain language of this statute and the principle that statutes be strictly construed. And this court said, no, we have settled this issue. And
this is the previous case involving these parties.
Right.
But there was some kind of equitable reason to give to pass through to golf management, and we said no, clearly not. But that was a totally different question here.
But the invitation to examine the privatization aspect or the efficiencies realized by market operation was the same there. They made that exact same argument. They said that, look, we're realizing efficiencies, and this is punishing us for being efficient. And the fact is that it's not a punishment for being efficient. It's a recognition that if you wish to operate in the market, that's fine. If you wish to realize those efficiencies, that's fine. The result of that is that you have to pay property tax. So that much is clear from all of the cases that this court has dealt with. In fact, this court has looked at cases where nonprofits ran the property and said, That's still not a public exempt purpose. This court has looked at situations where the city lost money, said that's still not a non-exempt public purpose. So the question of whether the city derives any revenue certainly is their intent, but isn't germane to the question of whether this property is being used exclusively for public benefit. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Haynes?
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court. The city of Cincinnati has operated public golf courses for almost a century, dating back to the 1920s. The city has done so through its Recreation Commission, whose mission is to provide broad access to recreational and cultural opportunities throughout the city. In the late 1990s, the city recognized that its courses were decades old and were suffering from deferred maintenance, fracturization of employee services, and they were just generally inefficiently being run. The city explored several options for the operation of its courses and determined that engaging an experienced private manager was the best way to carry out its public mission and provide the best services and broadest access to the citizens of the city.
Counsel, doesn't this case really present a public policy question that this court must answer, in the sense of you've got a private course that comes up and says there's a course down the street that really is run by private individuals, and they have an advantage that's hurting my business.
Justice O'Neill, it's the city's position that the Board of Tax Appeals decision in this case solidly rested on this court's existing precedent, finding that when property has not been leased to private entities, when the government retains significant control over the private entity's operation or over the operation.
So you think there was a rational basis for the city of Cincinnati not to enter into a lease?
Well, Justice O'Neill, our recreation director answered that question at the hearing before the Board of Tax Appeals, and he said, look, if the city had intended to place its golf courses into private competition, it would have simply, quote, handed the keys over to golf management and said, here, you run the properties, we'll take a rental in return. But no, we decided not to do that. The city decided to retain the control, and it was because of that control and the need to fulfill its public mission that it chose not to lease, and that it chose to retain the pretty invasive control that it retains over golf management's operation of its golf courses.
And was that the significant factor in all of the, you cite numerous cases in your brief, I think it's on page 7 or thereabouts, the distinguishing factor between exempt and non-exempt was the business arrangement between the city and the entity that was stepping into the shoes of the city for the operation, the skating rink, the parking lots, the airport, you know, some of the other facilities that are referenced. And, you know, you have a list of cases, some being exemption granted and others being exemption denied. And it's based on the business arrangement, correct?
Yes, Chief Justice O'Connor. It has been based upon the business arrangement. And the question has been ultimately, is it a situation in which government is operating the public property for the benefit of the public, or is it a situation in which the government has turned over the property to a private entity to engage in commercial enterprise for its own personal profits? We believe here that when the Board of Tax Appeals reviewed the facts and made its determinations that the city retained control, that it had not leased the property, that in fact this was a situation in which government was utilizing a private manager to increase the efficiency and function of its governmental function in this case, and not to allow a private entity to occupy its property and subject to its own devices operate with a view to a profit.
Do you take issue with the record that your friend on the other side had mentioned regarding the profits that the BTA looked at here? He suggested that the BTA was incorrect in their determination that this was de minimis.
Yes, Justice Lansinger, I do take exception with the tax commissioner's characterization of those profits for many reasons. And first of all, it should be noted that this court has previously held that it defers to those factual findings that are made by the Board of Tax Appeals. And in this case, the Board of Tax Appeals looked at the profits or the profit potential of golf management and said that they were so small relative to the revenues that are being derived by the courses that they were de minimis. I would also take exception with the characterization of this court's precedent in that area. There have been several cases, the Ohio Turnpike case, Ohio Turnpike case, the White House case, and the Southwest City Schools v. Kinney, a case in which this court looked at a golf course and concomitant concession operations and merchandising operations and said, look, there's no fruit of the poisonous profit bright line test here, where once any profits are made that it completely defeats the exclusively public purpose requirement. What it said is when there may be some profit making that is naturally occurring or naturally following this larger and principal public purpose, that's not going to destroy exemption.
And I understand we defer to the fact-finding, provided there's no abuse of discretion Is the record going to support the numbers that were actually looked at by the BTA? So I thought I heard counsel say that there was error there in the numbers that were looked at and the consideration that was given.
Justice Lansinger, the city views the tax commissioner's characterization of some of those numbers as different. We believe that the Board of Tax Appeals properly excluded Golf Management's management fee as a profit that accrues to Golf Management. That is a fee for service. It's not the result of some profit making enterprise. I would also like to point out that when those numbers are pointed to, the tax commissioner is comparing revenues, not profits. He's looking at Golf Management retains 93% of the revenues. Golf Management for I believe it's the merchandise, and retains something like 80%, 85% of the revenues for food and beverage service. Those are revenues. Those are not gross profits. So when in the briefing, when you see references to these millions of dollars, these are gross revenues derived from those operations over the operation of seven different courses. When you break them down on a course-by-course basis based on the profit margins that were estimated at the Board of Tax Appeals hearing, it's not nearly as significant as the tax commissioner would have you believe.
Counsel, I think you'll agree with me that this case, based on our previous case law, kind of hinges on whether or not there's a lease. You agree with that?
Justice O'Neill, I would very much agree with that. That the court has viewed that as a dispositive factor in many
cases.
And
I guess I'm troubled as a matter of law then when a management contract gives someone exclusive responsibility and control over all areas and structures within the boundaries. That's not a lease?
No, Justice O'Neill, that's not a lease.
Why?
It's not a lease because, first of all, there's no payment of rent.
I'm sorry?
There's no payment of rent in respect to the sole
payments.
I'm sorry?
There's a lot of payments. They may not be called rent, but there's a lot of payments.
There's payments in exchange for services being provided, but not payments for the use of the land. The city retains the responsibility for paying all real estate taxes. The city retains the responsibility for providing all utilities to the courses. The city retains an exclusive right of entry, which it exercises on an almost daily basis based on the record. And it has the ability.
But what do they mean when they say exclusive responsibility and control over all areas?
I think what that means, Justice O'Neill, is
look at the word exclusive.
Justice O'Neill, the way that is works in operation is it's sole and exclusive for Golf Management's management purposes, but it's not to the exclusion of the city, and it's not to the exclusion of the golfing public who uses the courses.
They couldn't use it for some other purpose. Golf Management couldn't go in there and say, we've got exclusive management of this property, and we're going to put a swimming pool in, and we're going to put a theme park in, and all that sort of stuff.
That's correct, Justice O'Connor. The only way Golf Management could do that would be under the direction and control of the Cincinnati Recreation Commission. I'd also like to point out that Mr. Fossey referenced the standard for construing a tax exemption statute. He has argued, and the city acknowledges that this court has often said, that tax exemption statute should be strictly construed. But that construction must also be tempered with reason and with the intent to give effect to the legislature's purpose. And as this court has said, for instance, in the Benjamin Rose case cited approvingly by the tax commissioner, that tax exemptions are meant to benefit the general public. And in this case, you look at what this exemption does. This exemption allows the city to make full use of its revenues to maintain its golf courses, to pay for the operation of the golf courses. In this case it actually has, when that exemption is taken away, the city is deprived of those revenues. And as a result, in this case, the city's actually had to close one of its seven golf courses. It now only operates six because being deprived of the exemption, the city's had to close a course, and that has actually worked against its public mission because now access to golf has been reduced by one course.
So that should trump the idea that an independent contractor is, in a sense, given a privilege or preferred in this kind of arrangement to as opposed to someone who just owns the golf course, like the individual bringing the case here. That shouldn't matter, the fact that the independent contractor then gets the advantage of the property exemption in place of the city.
Justice Lansinger, if these courses were actually in competition with each other, then that may be the case. But here, we're talking about apples and oranges. We're talking about golf courses that are being operated in the context of a larger public mission to provide recreational and cultural activities throughout the city versus persons who are operating golf courses for their own personal benefit and own personal enrichment. The city is reimbursing a private contractor for its experience and ability in operating courses, but those benefits are all flowing to the city and the citizens through, you know, improved operation of the courses, improved service to the golfing public.
But then the independent contractor is also benefiting.
Well, Your Honor, there's some benefit in the sense that they are being paid a fee for their services. They are not doing it pro bono, but if the court were to hold that defeats the public purpose exemption, then it would deprive the state and local governments throughout the state of this valuable tool of efficiently managing government by leveraging expertise that is not within government control. I'll give you another example of a benefit that a private contractor or private manager can bring to the city. Since this case has been going on, I'm the third attorney. There's been three city solicitors who have handled this case. Turnover in government is pretty significant. It helps to have someone who's got that expertise and that continuity to continue to operate the course. And that's just something that government simply can't provide.
I guess it's a bigger question. The privatization of government function is a bigger question here, but you're focusing on the exemption only.
That's correct, Justice Lansinger. And I would point out, too, that this is not privatization, at least not privatization as the city would define it. Privatization is, as I mentioned to Justice O'Neill earlier, privatization is handing the keys over to a private entity and saying, here, you operate this in return for paying us some kind of a rental, but otherwise we're not going to put many restrictions on how you operate this property. This is government working hand in hand with a private individual individual to make government better. And that is not privatization as I would see it. That is the continuation of a government function, just using assistance from the private sector to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, the record indicates that the city sets the golf course rates, the budgets, the appropriations, and the hours and the dates of operation. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Approves contract related to the golf course operation and employs the golf audit team that inspects the course on a weekly basis. Would you agree with that?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It also sets the green fees?
In consultation with Billy Casper Golf.
When Casper wanted to increase it, the city said no?
They've pointed to a couple occasions where they said no. They didn't point to the many, many occasions they said yes.
Okay, but the point there, I guess, is there's not blanket carte blanche for the golf management operate this. It obviously retains control and ownership of the golf course and makes sure that it is open for the public use.
So all the features you've described are business relationship features. We're talking about, you know, I've hired somebody to run a business on my property, and I'm going to have business meetings with them, which is what these meetings were, to check in. And just like a commercial landlord might say to a commercial tenant, you got to have certain signage, you got to be open these hours.
They're not going to tell them what they can charge for their product. They're not going to say, you know, you can't charge higher than this rate for a plate of spaghetti or, you know, whatever other service you're providing here. And here it has to be done in consultation with the city, and the city maintains control over the revenue stream.
And the city did so and brought Billy Casper Golf on board with the express intent to increase revenue. Now, Billy Casper Golf is looking at 100 courses in the Cincinnati area and determining how to competitively set the prices. So this isn't a situation where the city is saying, find us the best rate where we can get people to come and play. They're setting their rates competitively, and they brought Billy Casper Golf in purposefully for that purpose. This isn't so to say, you know, the city's setting the rates. Sure, they are. They're doing it for a profit to operate their business. So it's again, this goes back to the essential element of what's happening boots on the ground on the property. What's the use of this property? And the use of this property is 100% by golf management in this case.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, gentlemen. Thank you, and you will be notified of our decision.